Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
It's time for another adventure in New Jersey with what's becoming our annual connection with the awesomely talented inspirational writer and indeed science fiction writer, as we are about to find out, Christina Rienzi. How are you, Christina?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
Oh, great to connect with the good self as ever, and particularly interested in this 2018 novel that you produced, of course, which is now award-winning and is doing all sorts of other marvelous things, etc. Of course, it's entitled Among Us, congratulations to start off with for winning silver in the sci-fi space exploration category of the prestigious Global Book Awards.
Thank you. That was so exciting. I'm thrilled that my book was recognized. I love, of course, my story that I wrote, and I'm glad that it was well received by the book community.
Well, rightly so. Now, I must admit, when we've spoken in the past, we talked about inspiration and so on. I wasn't really aware of your science fiction interests and so on. Has that been something that's always been there? Has it been something which you've always kind of had percolating under the background in terms of obviously speculative fiction in general?
Yes, absolutely. So my favorite all-time television show is the original 1960s Twilight Zone. And I feel like, you know, growing up watching that and getting inspiration from various other science fiction-based television shows and books, I really have an affinity for it. I like to think about the what ifs, be open to the possibilities of anything being possible. And it's something that I've pondered my whole life. Like, what is out in the universe? I'm very interested in space exploration. I'm interested in what the government knows and doesn't know, which is what my book is about. It's a government conspiracy theory type thriller, science fiction thriller. So yeah, it's been something that I've always been interested in. And it's funny, in speaking with my family, I found out my grandmother, who I didn't know all that well, but she came from Italy. She barely spoke English, but one of her favorite shows was Star Trek. And I found it so interesting that way back when she was here, that was something that kind of almost runs in my bloodline. Like, it made me, it was very interesting to me because she isn't someone that I would have thought would be into science fiction. So yeah, it's probably in my genes.
Now, you juxtapose in Among Us, obviously, the opening chapter, which starts in 1968, which again ties in with the height of Star Trek, of course, a year before the Apollo moon landings of 1969 and the subsequent cancellation of the original series. You mentioned, of course, the Twilight Zone. Then you actually take us right back up to the present day, and we have a range of other areas of folk that sort of come within that. Was that a deliberate policy to actually choose the 1960s to actually launch the text and to effectively go from there?
Yeah, that was. It was a very specific time. I wanted to go back in time. I wanted to be able to go back 50 years to be able to show one of the mentor characters, Lou Rollins, who was a retired general in the Army. I wanted to show what his experience was and start from that, because that his experience is really what moves the story forward from the beginning. And so I wanted to get into his mind and get into his space and time and start there. And yeah, the timing was perfect because life was different back then. And the way that we approached things like space exploration, as well as what might be out in the universe, is completely different than maybe not so different than what we would do today. But it has evolved, I should say. Maybe the practices are the same, but it has evolved. But yeah, and it was a very interesting time. And so I did my research about that time period and what was appropriate. And I happened to not live far away from a former Army base. And so it is something that's on my mind a lot as well. And of course, having family members who were veterans. So yeah, just a very tied well into where I live and the timing. I wanted to show both kind of sides of that.
Well, just taking that final paragraph of chapter one, Lou narrowed and widened his eyes in rapid succession. His vision alone couldn't be trusted. Awe and fear swirled inside his gut like marble rye. An honest-to-God illusion stared back at him. Mouth agape in wonder, he reached for his radio without breaking his stare on the thing that couldn't exist, but did. An interesting teaser there. I can see it sort of opening up into a series in all sorts of ways. But you mentioned, of course, your Army connections. Well, another one of our regular midweek drivettes who has good Army connections, indeed has been a Marine correspondent, amongst other things, in California, is Kathy Manso. Kathy, welcome to our Author of the Week feature. What questions would you like to put to Christina?
Hi, hello. Yes. Well, I actually kind of wanted to ask you what you were reflecting on already, where you grew up kind of in this area and you've incorporated in the book, but I wanted to know if you have any personal stories or memories that have you've intertwined into your story.
That's a great question. There are a couple of scenes in the book where, well, I'm very much like Marcy. I'm somebody who likes to explore the unknown. I'm also someone who lives kind of a conservative life. And so she's a conservative life by day. She kind of like dabbling in the world of the unknown at night. And so that's sort of who I am. And yeah, I mean, I definitely incorporated parts of me, of course we do in all our characters, but there were a couple of scenes that were flashbacks for her when she was young and things that happened when she was like laying in her bed and she was having these experiences and thoughts of things. And I just remember growing up, I was an only child and I would spend a lot of time in, bed just thinking about the world and the universe. And so I kind of expanded on that for the story and to make it more exciting. But certainly I would like think about, oh, I wonder if there are, other beings in the universe. And you think about this kind of stuff as a kid and your mind is wide open and it would scare me too to think about. But I liked just getting in my head and really exploring and being creative in what might be. And so I definitely used that fuel to set the stage for her experience when she was younger that kind of connects to what's happening to her in today, modern day in the book.
Well, I think that's really relatable because I think we've all had those kind of thoughts. It would be terribly sad if we were alone in the universe, I just can't fathom it.
Sure, definitely. It's and I love the idea, the whole idea behind the book. It's like whether people who are skeptics or who believe, the idea is just open your mind to what could be. And I think that's what fiction does, is it opens your mind to the creative possibilities of what might be. And that's kind of where I went with this book. It's like, what if some of these things were real and what would that look like? And so I just wanted to be able to open people's minds and say, like, question everything. Nothing is as concrete as what's in front of you. As an academic, as somebody in business, as a writer, I question everything. And I like to have an open mind and know I don't know at all. And that's okay. I'm comfortable with that. There's a lot I don't know. And that's what makes life exciting. Like you said, it's exciting to wonder what if this could be.
Science fiction is often used as a metaphor, it's used as an allegory. We've had pretty much 220 odd years of science fiction since Mary Shelley first actually effectively launched the whole genre with Frankenstein, aka the modern Prometheus. You talked about clearly the use of, or the inspiration of Rod Serling in Twilight Zone. Were there any other science fiction writers that you were impressed with, Christina, that you thought, actually, there's a little dabble of Octavia Butler coming in here, or maybe even a bit of Ursula K. Le Guin, or other writers as well.
Yeah, so Heinlein, I love his books from the 70s, and he was somebody who I read a lot of and loved how futuristic and just relevant. I mean, we're still using these concepts today, and there's a new show on it, it's called Black Mirror, which is like a modern day Twilight Zone, and a lot of the concepts that he came up with in his books are being used there. And it's like timeless, even though it's futuristic, it's these we have not caught up with this yet. So very interesting to me. Certainly that kind of, has paved the way for what I think about. And I just try to open my mind to science, to where, science is going and things in the media about what can be done scientifically with genes and with just different information I'm very interested in from a science background as well. So I feel like when you take all of those pieces, you can create that kind of, unbelievable, but make it believable and create that angst and fear and excitement for what if this kind of stuff was really happening? What would that look like? And how is, and I think that, so to your point about like there are a lot of behind the scenes, metaphors and analogies that go on in science fiction for real life. And I think for me, the basis of my book wasn't necessarily a good and evil. It was a truth versus lies. Like, do we know the truth? Should we know the truth? Do we want to know the truth? Is there a benefit to hiding the truth? Is there something about knowing the reality that is not good? We want transparency. We want to know everything, but do we? And that was kind of the way I approached it. It's like, do we really want to know it all? And when I wrote the book, I thought, if all this was true, would I really want to know this? And I struggled with that because part of me does and part of me doesn't. I kind of want to be ignorant in the bliss of not knowing. and the what ifs. Because I think once you know things, there's a responsibility and a heaviness that weighs on you. And so I feel like there's that kind of, when people read my book, I hope they think about like what they really think they want to know and not know and why, because that's a lot of, we always say, well, they're not telling us things and we want to know. And we think we want to know, and maybe we do, and maybe we deserve to know, but maybe not knowing is the protection. And so even though the government in this book is the antagonist and Marcy is the protagonist, she's fighting for the truth. The government's saying, we don't want to tell you. And I wonder, are they really the antagonists? Are they for the greater good? So I gave myself a very objective viewpoint when I built this book and the characters, because I wanted to make sure that there was equality and I wasn't leaning one way or another. And I let people decide. There are obviously clear, you know, evil in the book. But on the flip side of that, there's questionable evil, because, you know, what they think they're doing is right. And they have good reason. And it's, you know, and we don't all have all the facts. And I think a lot of times in life, we don't know what we don't know, meaning we don't have all the information. And so we want an outcome and we push for that outcome, whatever that may be, but we don't really know everything. Nobody does. So it's just trying to promote also diversity in thinking and appreciation for opposite viewpoints and being able to come to some middle ground where everybody goes, well, we don't really know everything, so we have to come together in some way.
Science fiction clearly emerges from the culture of its period. We're seeing an awful lot of Chinese science fiction that's being written and produced now, understandably, as China embraces a technological future and so on. Do you feel that the dream that is often manifested by the likes of Elon Musk and arguably Jeff Bezos in terms of interplanetary, extraterrestrial missions, etc., has its roots in the kind of science fiction that you mentioned? Robert Heinlein, of course, in many ways has had a bit of a checkered critical history in terms of his views, which could be seen as borderline extreme right wing in some of the early 1950s stuff, etc., shifting to obviously something like Stranger in a Strange Land, which is clearly a kind of an interesting tale on the traditional fish out of water system. Do you feel that the best science fiction, probably like Among Us, actually manages to capture the spirit of the time, but at the same time, maybe signpost a possible future?
Yes, I think that's a great point. I think you definitely have to be able to connect with the people who are reading it now. And there's going to be people in the future that are going to be reading it, hopefully, as well. And it won't be too dated. Hopefully, the things that happen in my book aren't going to come to fruition anytime soon if you guys read it. But at the end of the day, I do think there's a child in all of us that wonders, that child in their bed at night wondering about the universe and looking out, you know, their window and thinking what's out there, what could be, and being scared by that, but also fascinated by that and thinking about life. At least that's the kind of kid many of us were. And I think, you know, to Jeff and Elon's, you know, their driving goal, maybe part of that child inside of them, this is the psychologist in me coming out, part of that child inside of them that wants to explore and now has the means to do so. And it's like, hey, I can afford this. I'm one of the few people in the world that can. I'm going to go pursue this unbelievable goal that not many people can achieve because I can, and go see what's there and have that wonder. I think that is something that is rare. And, you know, that's how they're capitalizing on it, right or wrong. I think that's, you know, it's got to come from a place inside of you, and maybe that inner child and that excitement and wonder is there. And I think that will always be there, because no matter what we learn and what happens from now and, you know, 1,000 years from now, we're not going to ever know everything. It's never going to be. The universe is so vast, and some people argue multiverse and different dimensions. Like, there's so much information. We are limited by the capacity of our brains. And so we will never know it all, right? So there's always going to be some kind of exploration happening and some kind of a wonder and dreaming. And, you know, the writers of the world contribute to that. It isn't just the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezos of the world and the Richard Bransons who are putting space shuttles into the air. It's the everyday person who's questioning things, who's writing stories about this, who's asking, you know, people to consider beyond what they see in front of their eyes. And to know that there's more to science than what we can see. There's so many layers. So yes, I appreciate everything from the very clinical research-based scientific evidence and data to the dreamers, because I think that there's somewhere in the middle is the truth.
William Shatner certainly was keen to say that everybody should have the experience that he had age 90 when he traveled outside of the Earth's atmosphere and so on. And maybe there is something insofar as we see this fragile blue marble and we realize that as we're doing in this particular interview, connecting via technology, of course, the science of a technology connecting Lincoln with New Jersey across the Atlantic in ways which might have seemed to have been complete fantasy only a matter of decades ago. That there is this sort of notion of keeping the balance right. There is an optimistic, positive mindset, though, crucial when we're addressing this. And I'm sort of alluding to, obviously, the character Marcy, who, when we were initially introduced to her in Among Us, we tend to think, I don't know, she might be sort of literally just stoned out of her mind on all sorts of other crazy things. And it's the old mm-hmm. Jack Daniels that's kind of set her off all manner of bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. Has the moon gone? What's happening here?
Yeah, so I think she's not all positive. You know, she's a very realistic creature. She's somebody who has stressors in life. She is trying to fit into I think her stress comes from the fact that she's trying to be someone she isn't completely. So she's showing up every day in this persona that she isn't truly. The three dimensions and more of herself are pieces she isn't allowed to show at work. So she's stressed by that, and I think conflicted by that, in that she gets to be this other person who is deep and thinks about the world and isn't always positive. She's just rational, and she wants to know logically, is this real? Let's tell people. Like, she's got this different kind of mindset where she's open to the possibilities and doesn't want to be trapped by just what society and her job put on her to be this person that she's supposed to be. And I think that's where her struggle comes in. And you find that she's right. Like, she's got the drink by her bedside. She's reading horror novels. She's on the computer.
Yeah, the kind of ingredients there, Christina, which you tend to think, well, this could trigger off a whole range of things. It's a bit like, are you eating cheese, you know, before bedtime? Yeah. Look what happened to Screech. Right.
Yes, exactly. I mean, so I agree with you. I think it's, until she starts this adventure and she goes on an adventure, and then it just takes off and she's like truly who she wants to be and she thrives. And the adventure is what she needed, right? In life. And she needed, so I think that there's a message in there for all of us. It's like, don't, yes, we have to be certain people at certain times that are, you know, we have to fit into a box, but like, remember who you are fully and embrace that, because she's so split into, she's not really happy. And she's not enjoying her life, and she's not doing really great at work or really great in her blog. She's just kind of, you know, surviving until something excites her, and then she goes off. So it's like that thing that makes you excited and gives you like a reason to live and a passion. And if it's a curious question you want to answer or an adventure you want to go on, those are the things we all can do in our life. Like, what makes you excited? Whenever I'm deciding what kind of story to write, whether it's nonfiction or fiction, and book, I should say, it's like at that moment, I think, what am I so excited about? What am I passionate about? What is firing me up? That's what you should do. You know, that's whatever you should do in life, whether it's, you know, a hobby or a career move or a trip you're going to take, like, what is getting you to feel like you're alive? That's what it's about. And so I think that there can be some advice in there for everybody. It isn't just about always being positive and having, you know, your head on in a pot, because life isn't all positive, but it's doing what brings you joy and happiness and sparks that inside of you, like, that's what you should be going for.
And we haven't even spoken about Pierce, but that's another character entirely in terms of his particular viewpoint. Kathy, back to yourself.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a little bit, because of your psychology background, is there anything that you've read or researched in the last few years, as in a study, that you were skeptical about, but you're now leaning more towards it? And if it's, or maybe you agreed with it and then later found out you disagreed with it, and if you've incorporated that into your writing at all?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I'm in a PsyD program right now. So I'm going for my doctorate in psychology, and my focus is on health and wellness psychology. And a lot of what I wrote in my thrillers really was based in psychopathology. And so, yes, there's a lot of new research that's come out where, you know, from in 1998, positive psychology was born. So that is a new field of psychology that focuses on happiness and joy, but it acknowledges your negative emotions, right? So like prior to that, my training was in psychopathology, which was really all about the abnormal psychology and how to deal with negative feelings and fixing everything. And it's like going from trauma to function, where I'm looking at like going from function to optimal. So absolutely, I've shifted the way that I in my writing now, I did a book on happiness, Five Happy Choices, which was another award winner, which was great and positive. But my goal is really to come to some happy medium where I'm looking at mental health is a whole and how are we dealing with, because negative emotions have value. You know, and it's not all about being positive and happy. And even though I write about happiness and positivity and how to get there, it stems from a place of discontent and unhappiness. So I think I have shifted the way I look at psychology. It isn't all just clinical and fixing an issue. It's about, okay, translating what we're going through in life as real things. And then finding out how we can get to where we want to be, which is feeling good, but not discounting the negative stuff. It's there for a reason. It's teaching us what we want, what we don't want. And we have to acknowledge that. And so a lot of things on wellness and health that I've been reading and then learning in school and doing scholarly arguments on and all of that great stuff that you guys know from school, how you're looking at things critically, is all about looking at both sides of it. There isn't just one side. And I think there has been a popular wave that I'm sure you guys have heard called toxic positivity, right? So everybody is, you see it everywhere. Happiness, be positive, joy, forget about the bad, think positive. This is all, if it's not centered around what comes before being happy and how to deal with happiness ongoing, and it's like a real viewpoint of it, it's toxic positivity, which basically means, oh, you're sad, forget being sad, be happy. That's not helpful to anyone who's sad. It's not helpful to anyone who's angry. And I, knowing all of this, it's not helpful to me. So I do try to make sure when I do put messages of positivity and well-being and health out there, that it is bordered by the fact that it is, you've got to have empathy, compassion, and understanding for yourself and others, but for yourself and your negative emotions and manage those, because you can't just go from I'm angry, now I'm going to be happy. It just doesn't work that way. And again, I wrote a book, Five Happy Choices, which helps you access happiness in the moment, but it does not discount the negative stuff because it's real. So I say that because I think that is an evolution in psychology, that we went from the psychopathology to the positive psychology. And that was fine. And that's good. And that's what we should be doing, because there's two sides to every coin, but we need to look at the holistic view of health and wellness and mental health. There is a holistic happy medium to this. And I do incorporate that in my nonfiction. And I think when I get back to fiction, I will be looking at all of that as well.
I think it's so interesting, because I mean, this could be a whole other show when you go into psychology alone.
Definitely.
But I think you bring up a great point about how you need to, it's more about focusing on yourself and then focusing on to others. But I find it interesting, especially with positivity, because I'm someone who generally a lot of people are like, oh, you're very optimistic, very positive. And sure, as a quick glance, that's usually how I come across. But for someone, I take great offense for someone who calls me that and they know me well enough. And it's like, well, you've seen a lot of different layers of me now. And if you're still categorizing me in this way, mm-hmm. I think it's also interesting to see that, like, you can work on yourself a lot, but it is so dependent on the individual to have to do their own work to do it as well. And it's something that's hard to communicate, at least in my experience.
It is. And I think it is, like, people say that, oh, you're so pot, you're up. And I am an optimistic person, but I go through every emotion, as my husband would tell you, because I live with him. Right. And I am okay. But the thing is, I give myself grace for it. It's like, I know I'm angry right now, and I'm okay with being angry right now, because angry is the way I need to be. I'm okay with being, you know, all business. I mean, I get to be all business a lot, because I have work that I have to get done. Like, I'm all business. Like, I can't be dealing with emotions right now. You know, we're humans. And I think the fact that you lean to the positive side is because you have dealt with and worked on yourself. I think when you work on yourself and you deal with the negative emotions, you can be positive more of the time, because you know that the negative isn't forever. You're not going to get stuck there and live there forever. But you are able to transition, but that doesn't mean that's all you are. And I do think that, you know, and we all have that friend or friends that are well-meaning and love you, but would only deal with positive, they are, because that is about them. And recognize that if somebody's coming to you and saying, oh, I know you're sad, but listen, it's so great, this, that, and the other. They cannot, they're having a hard time dealing with negative emotions. So when they have a hard time dealing with it, they push the positive on you. It's like, oh, well, because they cannot deal with negative. So it's not about you as much as it's them. But I think what people need to know is that we recognize that you're trying to be helpful and loving and kind, but what a person really needs is a friend. And when you're sad, you need someone to jump in the pit with you and go like, wow, I'm here for you. That's hard. I'm here for you. Let them say, well, the good point, you know, maybe you're the one who's going to say, you know what, it is hard, but I'm okay. Then they can jump in with the positive. But it's like, when you want to be there for somebody, even yourself, you've got to have empathy and learn to have empathy for yourself, because if nobody gives it to you, you got to give it to yourself. you know, you have to be able to be compassionate and say, you know what, we're going through something right now. It's okay to be angry. Because toxic positivity is everywhere. And what I fear, because I wrote a book on happiness, is that people are going to go, well, what does she think? Everyone's supposed to be happy all the time? No, I don't. And if you dive into my book, it tells you that. But I think my message is often about mental health and wellness in a viewpoint of holistic, because happiness is what we want, of course, but it isn't getting there overnight. Like, you're just supposed to forget everything and be happy. And certainly in my thrillers, there's not a lot of happiness coming out. It's more of challenges and triumphing. But I think what people tend to forget is that in order to get to that happy, transformational, triumphant performance, you need to go through stuff. And obstacles in thrillers are what get you there to that feeling at the end. So the end is the same feeling. But it is definitely skewed in right now, especially in the media, about happy, happy, joy, joy, positive, positive, right? And that is great, but that isn't realistic 100% of the time. It's not.
In a few weeks' time, Kathy and myself will be actually taking part in the Newark Book Festival. That's actually Newark, Nottinghamshire, as opposed to Newark, New Jersey. Easily sort of put together. But one of the themes of that, Christina, is writers and music and the underlying themes within that. So our question for you basically, Christina, is do you have a playlist that you listen to when you're producing something? You go back in time when you were writing Among Us, or indeed when you're writing in general, that you think, I can't possibly actually write this chapter unless I have at least one blast of Red Hot Chili Peppers, for instance.
Yeah, that's so funny. I'm not a music and write, I'm a quiet writing person, but when I need to be inspired just to do what I love to do, my favorite radio station is Yacht Rock on Sirius XM. It is mid-tempo rock from the 70s and 80s, kind of like classic rock, but like classic rock. It's just easy music. It's easy listening. And I like it because it reminds me of like young, many, many years ago and what my mom used to listen to. So it brings back warm, heartfelt memories of that. And it also just gets me into like a very even keeled mood where I can access anything I need to access for what I'm working on. So yeah, rock.
So any particular artists that you kind of think, oh yes, that's definitely me?
Oh, I love Michael McDonald. I love the typical Michael McDonald, Steely Dan. I like Chicago or the Eagles. You know, all of those people, I absolutely, Ambrosia, these are like, you know, some obscure artists, but I absolutely love, I love all of those guys. And then there's Christopher Cross, you know, those are the ones, but the Michael McDonald's and the Ambrosias and the, you know, of the world, that kind of really gets me in a mood of, I'm chilling out on a boat in the ocean. I live by the water with my champagne, and I'm not doing that, but in my head I am, and that can, I can do anything when I have that in my head,
so. So if we had Christopher Cross and Run Like the Wind, would that be suitable?
That's perfect. I love it.
Thank you. with respect to Christina Rienzi, who is our author this week, ace author, of course, and writer of Among Us. I'm very tempted to actually say Aliens Among Us. Was that also a deliberate choice in terms of the title to actually say that we never quite know whether, you know, it's the old Invasion of the Body Snatchers line on one hand, but it's the X-Files paranoia on the other hand, who might be the alien and who might be the humor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that. And it's also, you know, are they here but not in our view? Or have they been here? Or also, who is among us? Meaning, like, if we have a neighbor, right? Like, we don't know the neighbor has this experience and now is going to change our life, or the government is watching us. They're among us. So yeah, it is absolutely has multiple views, but definitely aliens is one of them. What, who is among us? Who's been among us? Are they living here underground? Are they living in the water? Are they living, you know, are they visiting us? It's all those questions that we, you know, kind of explore in my book.
And certainly there are many cosmologists who have even come around to the notion that we might indeed be Martians who actually sort of came to Earth from previous sort of adventures and so on. But that's another line entirely. Kathy, back to you.
Oh, man. Well, I did actually want to ask you a question since he got to ask you the music question. I've done this with some of our other guests before. Think of a character you really enjoy. I know you've mentioned Marcy before, but in your book, and what Netflix series would they be watching right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Oh, well, definitely. I bet you she'd be watching Black Mirror, because I love Black Mirror. And I think like she would definitely be watching that. There was also one with Emma Stone and I can't think of his name. And I think it's called Maniac. I think it's called
Maniac. Oh,
is it called Maniac? Yeah, I think it is. I think it's called Maniac. Anyway, it is interesting. It is a spin on sci-fi. It's a psychological twist. There's a lot of like a lot of science fiction, AI, like a lot of that going on. And I think she'd probably be watching that too. Maniac. It's a limited series show. It's with Emma Stone. And I can't think of his name now, but I can see his face. And I can't think of his name, but it'll come to me. But it's another famous actor, and it's really good. It's really good. But a little wild, you know, like mind bendy and things like that. Also, probably Stranger Things. I mean, let's face it, Stranger Things is right up her alley.
Oh yeah, no, same. All the shows right. are up. All those.
Look at Maniac. It's very interesting. It's a psychological kind of sci-fi. Also Sally Field is in it. There's some great, great actors in there.
Oh man, well, I haven't seen Maniac, so that's the one I'm going to jump on next because I finished. Yeah, I'm about to finish Stranger Things.
Yeah, I have to get back to that. That came out, and I'm like, I'm still catching up on some other shows, but that is on my list to finish. I love that. So yeah, all of that kind of stuff, definitely.
We've been focusing today, Christina, obviously on Among Us. And of course, in addition to that, there's also To Preserve, Protect and Defend, the short story in science fiction. There's the paranormal evidence in terms of Choosing Evil, Breaking Evil and Again that have been produced. And let's not forget the domestic suspense stories, 30 Shades of Dead, Train Girl, Luring Shadows and Winter Road. If we were to actually say, or if you had a general line that came down now and said, right, you got to choose, basically, Chris. So you can choose one genre. Which genre would you actually go for? Or would it be one that you haven't explored as yet? Are you a secret Western writer, for instance?
Right. Isn't that, you know what's really funny? I have post-its everywhere. And the one post that I have for thrillers, what I want to write, I want to get into psychological thrillers next. I feel like I dove into those a little bit in my domestic, but I think my psychological thrillers will be next because I'm so heavily, in school with psychology right now. Back to that, which is like one of my loves in life, always has been. But now that I'm going for my doctorate, it's like, this is all I'm being fed information wise, and I'm learning so much. So I definitely think I would dive into a psychological thriller. Science fiction will always be there. I think I'll always dip back in it to that area because it's so interesting to me. But I would love to go down the psychological thriller road and domestic and being that kind of subcategory of like the family member you didn't know who they really were kind of thing.
It was back in April 2021 when you last joined us, Christina, to actually talk about inspirational work and so on. And before that, of course, pre-pandemic on the 12th of September 2019, when you actually made your Midweek Drive debut from that point of view. Do you feel as though we've learned something over the last few years? I mean, clearly, COVID's now being replaced by monkeypox. There are other fears in terms of what's happening in the Ukraine. There are all manner of other challenges with respect to the global economy. There's a cost of living crisis that we're suffering through. Do you think, again, going back to that notion of, yeah, but we can all be very happy, that in terms of the ways forward, things have changed in our general outlook? And has your outlook changed in terms of your perception of how life in New Jersey is evolving?
Yes, I hope we learned some things. I definitely was focused on, I was in a funk when COVID hit, and I've gotten the tools now to get out of the funk. But when COVID hit, I started like, I have to get out of this. And I focused on happiness studies. I focused on positive psychology. I focused on well-being, right? And that led me to where I am in my studies with health and wellness psychology. But I will say that I hope that we've all learned that our mental health and well-being is really important, and that caring, having empathy and compassion are really important. And right now, you mentioned all these crises. Another crisis that's going on is in just the job market. I mean, it's very hard for companies to keep employees, and that's good for employees because they have lots of options. But I think companies are having a hard time retaining talent. They're having a hard time hiring people. And I think what we're forgetting about hiring and taking care of our employees is that we need to focus on their mental health and well-being. And part of people's mental health and well-being is flexible schedules and things like that. So there's a lot that's come out of COVID beyond all of this, and a lot that's going on in the world where I think as a world, as a global concern, we need to be caring about people's mental health and well-being and taking care of them on all levels, not just on, I'm going to pay you a salary to do a job. We need to think about what do these people need to be healthy and happy people. I think a lot of the problems in the world is we're not dealing with mental health issues on many levels. And we're not dealing with caring about people and having compassion and understanding. We are just pushing our agendas forward. And I think we need to slow down and think about other people and have empathy and compassion. And mental health is where it begins. And that doesn't mean you have to have a diagnosis. You know, not everybody has a mental health diagnosis or mental illness diagnosis, but we all have mental health. We have to take care of our mental health. That means having downtime, having relaxation, being respected, being given authority over our lives, freedoms, all of those things are really important. Safety, security, well-being, you know, self-actualization, which was the birth of positive psychology. So we need to have all of this stuff fed to us. And I think that my goals have shifted from, yes, I want to always dip into well-being and happiness. That's important because this is what people understand. Like, I know what it means to be happy. That it makes sense to me. But I think that the deeper issue is like, let's focus on mental health and well-being. And we've got to do that lots of different ways. So I hope my contribution over the next year and going forward is helping people become aware of mental health, what that is. You don't have to be diagnosed with a mental illness to be thinking about it and caring about it and what it looks like for you to take care of your mental health so you can be happy. You know, it just doesn't happen overnight. And part of that, like I said, is, yeah, it's all, sometimes it's shutting the news. For me, it's shutting off the news, not because I don't care, but because I physically get upset and I can't handle it. And I get like so upset about things I can't control. For me personally, I always am tapping into my empathy. So like watching the news, I will be very upset and won't be able to sleep. So I know you have to know yourself and you have to know what you're digesting from social media and news standpoint that you is affecting your mental health. So for me, I know that certain things that I deal with on the news affect my mental health and I can't deal with them. I have to deal with them in a different way. Maybe it's following someone on social media that spins it in a way that is helpful because just negative news coming at me personally all the time, it degrades my spirit and it makes me feel helpless and I'm emotionally not able to be there for others. So you just have to know yourself and what you can handle. And I'm not saying don't ever turn the news on and who cares what's going on in the world, because that's not, we need to know what's going on in the world so we can acknowledge and have compassion. But I think you need to know your limits. Like maybe don't watch the news 5 hours a day or be on social media 6 hours a day. Like tap in, check in, what can I deal with, and tap out, because our mental health is definitely affected by the news and social media.
Or just listen to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. I mean, there are over nearly 5,000 podcasts, so we always go on that basis, which is important.
There you go. That's perfect.
Christina, we heard Christopher Cross earlier, given a choice between Chicago and the Eagles, which band would you like to go for and what particular track?
So Eagles. And I love all their songs. Oh my God. So, one of the slower songs that I love is The Best of My Love. I love that song. Of course, Hotel California is a classic. Take It Easy. I love all of them. Really, any of them would be good, but I like the Take It Easy. I'm going to go with that one because I feel like, Just the vibe of it is very chill, and it just gets you, like, it gets me in the mindset of, like, go with the flow. I think so many oftentimes we try to resist things and control things, at least that's me. And then we wonder why it didn't go the way we wanted. And sometimes you just got to go, I got to go with the flow. Like, if I cannot check off that thing from my list today, it's okay. It'll get done. And you have to believe it versus trying to manipulate everything to get things done. So take it easy. Like, I want that to just be kind of the theme. It's like, just take it easy. Just relax. Like, let it go. Enjoy.
And that's what will be coming up. And we wrap up by obviously saying ChristinaRienzi.com is the go-to website to actually find out all manner of marvelous things from that perspective. Kathy, first of the two final questions for Christina, please.
Of course. So my first question for you, Christina, is have you had an interestingly fun Zoomer with us today?
Absolutely. 100%. It was the best. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. And my next question and final question is, will you be joining us in the near future?
Anytime you want, I'm there. You just let me know.
Hey, Christina Rienzi.
Great job.
As ever, we salute you. Take care. We've been delighted to have Christina Rienzi among us.
The sound of your own wheels drive you crazy. Lighten up while you still can. Don't even try to understand. Just find a place to make your stand and take it easy. Sound.